Ezra chapter 5, and you have a handout in front of you. And I go back and forth between sometimes I am very quick and decisive in making decisions, and other times I'm kind of indecisive. Do you need a handout, Sean? So Linda or Elmer, if you can get a handout, we got Sean needs one. Sometimes I'm very decisive, and sometimes I'm not decisive. Have you ever been to a restaurant with somebody who was not decisive, and they couldn't make up their mind on the menu? Okay, I'm okay sometimes, but I really like Mexican food. I love Mexican food, and I don't know if you've ever been to authentic Mexican-style restaurants. If you have, they usually have about 30 or so things on the menu, which is great. You got options, but the more options you have, if you're indecisive, the harder it is to make a choice. And if you're not very fluent in Spanish, or maybe even just in language in general, and you look at the menu and you read the title of the dish, that's not enough to tell you what the dish is and whether or not you like it. And there's usually a paragraph underneath each dish. So my wife is gracious and patient with me when I have to read the whole menu to know what I need to order, because I want to make sure I don't miss the best dish there. So I'm being indecisive, and I have to read everything to figure out what I'm going to order, and then I finally make an order about 3 hours later. In the midst of the intense pressure of the waiter or waitresses, and they're being nice about it, but they keep, you know, the waiters and waitresses show up very frequently when you don't want them to come. And then when you want them to come, you can't find them. But they just keep coming and saying, you know, are you ready? Do you know what you want? I feel the pressure. Can you stop pressuring me? I can't decide. And then if the people you're with sometimes are also, like, they're all ready and you're the only one left to order. Or have you ever done the thing where you're with a larger party and you're like, go ahead and order. I'll be ready when it gets to me. And they all order within 3 seconds. And you're like, okay, I'm not ready yet. And there's just decisions to make and you don't know what to do. And do you ever feel like you're in scenarios in life where there are, it's not a food thing, but there's decisions that you need to make? And there's options, there's directions, there's like fork, or like in Pittsburgh, there's a spider web in the road. You can go 8 different directions, and you don't know which direction you're supposed to go. And any of you the type that you would just rather pull over on the side of the road and wait till there's a sign from God to decide to go or not? Okay, you know, some of us are just hesitant when it comes to decisions, and we would like to know, wouldn't you like to know how to navigate those decisions a little better? To know, am I supposed to do something or not supposed to do something? Am I supposed to be working and striving to change the situation, or am I supposed to be content with the situation? And I kind of misled you last week unintentionally, because I had said today we'd get to the building of the temple, and we are sort of. Today's like the bridge to that. So it's like we're still partially in being content land, which... Any of you say you love when God says, when you're stuck in a situation you don't like and God says, just be content with it? Anybody love that? No? Okay, good. All right, good. I'm not the only one. So we don't like that, but there's a lot of times where God's like, I know it's not what you want, but just be okay with it. Anybody ever have God tell you that, or you discovered that's what God wanted, just be okay with it? Okay, some of you. All right, so we got that scenario, and we got the scenario in which we can change everything and make things better. How many would prefer that one? I could change all my problems and make everything better, all right? So that's where we want to get to, and sometimes we can get to, and sometimes we've got to stay content. And today's, like I said, it's in the middle. We're going to figure out the answer to, when should I be content, and when should I start to strive and try to change things? And so the Lord, through Ezra 5, is going to give us some examples that's going to help us figure that out. Are you glad you're going to get all the answers today? You excited? Okay. All right, so we're going to get all the answers today on how to do that. And we're also going to know how to order food at a Mexican restaurant a lot faster. All right? actually, I did learn one secret on how to make that faster. That is, if they have a website, you can go online ahead of time and read the menu for 3 hours before you go. Ezra chapter 5, if you'd look with me. Again, a little bit of a lengthy passage, not as long as last week. But Ezra 5 says, now the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, anybody recognize those names? Okay, those are the same prophets of the books in the Old Testament, Haggai and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel who was over them, Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, arose and began to rebuild the house of God that is in Jerusalem, and the prophets of God were with them, supporting them. Verse 3. Bozeni, and their Attenai, the governor of the province beyond the river, and Shethar Bozeni and their associates came to them and spoke to them thus, "Who gave you a decree to build this house and to finish this structure?" They also asked them this, "What are the names of the men who are building this building?" But the eye of their God was on the elders of the Jews, and they did not stop them until the report should reach Darius, and then an answer be returned by letter concerning it. Verse 6. This is the copy of the letter that Tattenai, the governor of the province beyond the river, and Shethar Bozeni, again, aren't you glad you're not reading the names this morning, and his associates, the governors who were in the province beyond the river, sent to Darius the king. They sent him a report in which was written as follows. To Darius the king, all peace, be it known to the king that we went to the province of Judah, to the house of the great God. It is being built with huge stones, and timber is laid in the walls. This work goes on diligently and prospers in their hands. Then we asked those elders and spoke to them thus, "Who gave you a decree to build this house and to finish this structure?" We also asked them their names for your information, that we might write down the names of their leaders. And this was their reply. "We are the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and we are rebuilding the house that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and finished. But because our fathers had angered the God of heaven, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried away the people of Babylon, to Babylon. Verse 13. However, the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, Cyrus the king made a decree that this house of God should be rebuilt, and the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple that was in Jerusalem and brought into the temple of Babylon, these Cyrus the king took out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered to one whose name was Sheshbazzar, whom he had made governor. And he said to him, take these vessels, go and put them in the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be rebuilt on its site. Then this Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundations of the house of God that is in Jerusalem. And from that time until now, it has been in building, and it is not yet finished. Therefore, if it seems good to the king, let search be made in the royal archives there in Babylon, to see whether a decree was issued by Cyrus the king for the rebuilding of this house of God in Jerusalem, and let the king send us his pleasure in this matter. So today we're going to learn how to order from a menu in a Mexican restaurant. Now, actually, there are much more significant decisions to make than that, aren't there? And we need to know what direction to go, and how do we figure that out? And have you ever asked for a sign from God and he didn't give it? Have you ever asked God to speak from you to you and you didn't hear it? And I think sometimes it's because we're expecting a Moses experience of lightning coming from the mountain and a loud voice coming out of the mountain or from a burning bush. And that can happen, but often that is not the case. So then when I don't have the audible voice of God coming, how do I know what I'm supposed to do, especially when I'm in the midst of circumstances that, like we've been saying, I just don't see any progress in, right? Nothing seems to be moving forward. Like I've said before, I can deal with negative circumstances if I can see progress, all right? As long as I see that it's improving, okay, that's fine. I can wait this out. But if there's no movement, or don't you love when things start moving backwards? You know, you wanted to make progress, and you're not even standing still anymore. You're moving backwards, and I want to figure out how to make progress, or I at least want to figure out, what am I supposed to do here, God? Am I supposed to care? Am I supposed to keep striving, or am I supposed to just be content? Well, one of the things that God does to the people in the Bible that will often reveal, help them discover what was going on, is he would ask them questions. Do you remember when Adam and Eve, when they fell, when they sinned against God, the first thing God did when he showed up is he asked a question. And then he followed up with another question. When Cain murdered his brother and God showed up, what did he do? He asked a question. When Jesus showed up on the scene, yes, he did teach, but he also began to ask people questions. Because for some reason, questions draws out within us what's going on and what's there, and it helps us to begin to discover what actually is taking place, and we can see clearly. So we today have five questions that God wants us to ask when we're trying to figure out what we're supposed to do. And when we ask these questions, God will, in doing so, help reveal to us what we're supposed to be doing. And you might say, well, how do these questions come from what we just read? I'm going to show that for you in just a second. But these questions are somewhat related to each other. The first two questions, they are completely within our control. And what I mean by that is God places that in our control. Some people who are very extreme on the God sovereignty side have a hard time with the idea of thinking that anything is within our control. And human free will, what creates some of the struggle here is our view on human free will and God's sovereignty. And I think the reason why we debate it at times is because both are mentioned in Scripture, that we have some free will choices and God is sovereign. And God sovereignly chose, he is sovereign, but he sovereignly chose to give you choices and an ability to make choices and affect your life and affect the lives of others. And if we lean too heavily on the free will side, then what will happen sometimes is we will be striving really hard to change things. Have you ever found yourself with your, it feels like your wheels are spinning in the mud? You know, you're putting a lot of effort, but you're not moving anywhere. We will find ourselves striving at times, and we will not realize that we're striving against the will of God for our lives. We're trying to change things and make things happen, and God didn't want that to happen in our lives, and so we're not going anywhere. And we end up causing ourselves a lot of heartache and misery and frustration, and we also waste a lot of time, a lot of energy, and sometimes a lot of resources to get nowhere, and we at times completely miss the plan and purpose that God has for our life and the fulfillment and the delight in that because we're striving to chase after something that is not what God had for us. But if we lean too heavily on the God's sovereignty side, then at times we find ourselves sitting on our hands, doing nothing, and waiting for God to make it happen. And yes, that happens sometimes, but sometimes he gave you the know-how, the ability, the opportunities, the relationships, and the resources to do something about your situation, and he is expecting you to do something. But because you're relying on God's sovereignty, you do nothing and you stay in the poor circumstances that you're in and you miss the improvements and the blessings that God has for you because you won't do anything for the sake of God's sovereignty. And you see how we can get stuck between either one of these scenarios. And I was talking with a friend of mine the other day. I almost tripped there. Did you see that? I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I said, the easier scenarios is when God says, go all out or do nothing. When God says, just do this to the nth degree, that's easy to figure out. When God says, don't do this at all, it's easy to figure out. When he says, sometimes do this, sometimes don't do that, that's hard. Because then now I have to figure out, well, when is the time to do it and when is the time not to do it? And again, the way we're going to figure that out is by asking questions. Are you ready to get all the answers today? You excited about this? You are going to leave today having all the answers to life. Isn't that exciting? And you know what? You know what a lot of the answers are? Silence. So the first two questions are completely within your control. The second two questions are a blend. They are sometimes in your control and sometimes they're not. The last one is completely outside of your control. And they need to go in this order. So the first question, it comes to us in this chapter here. The first question is this, and I forgot what it is. This is why I have notes here. Am I using a good strategy? Here's the interesting thing that is what was happening here. I don't know if you noticed this. So the narrator for us notes that the officials show up and they tell them, what are they doing? All right? Now, different than, and I don't know if you remember this, so last week we looked at chapter 4, and this week we're in chapter 5. Last week they started to lay the, they laid the foundation, and they got stopped. Now, if you noted what I gave to you in the handout last week in the years and stuff, we're in chapter 5, which is over 100 years after chapter 4. All right, so this is a completely different generation. Those people are not there anymore. And so we're in a completely different situation. Those people, the officials just stopped them. They got the help from the political authorities, and they just brought it to a stop. This time, people come and they start asking, what are you doing? And they gave them a response, and they said, okay, you can keep doing that until we figure out what's going on. They didn't stop them. And it says, because the eyes of their God was on them. God was causing them to have favor with these people. God was doing that. And in fact, when we look in the letter that the officials write to the authorities, they say what the Jews said to them. And one of the things that the Jews said to them was, our God is a sovereign God. They recognized that God is in control, and they can trust that God is in control. But here's the odd thing. I don't know if you noticed this. These same people who believed that God was sovereignly in control, he was going to make things happen, did you notice that they were building things? They were taking action and doing stuff. Did you know that? But they trust in God that he's going to make this happen, but they're doing the work. Did you also notice that they said to the officials, here's what I want you to do. Go and tell them that there is a law issued by Cyrus. Now, here's the problem with that. Cyrus issued the first decree, build. The second decree that they didn't mention was to stop building. Why didn't they tell them about the last law? Because they didn't want them to stop them, right? So they didn't mention it. Also, did you notice that they confessed that our people had sinned against God and were rebellious and they got led into captivity? Did you notice they mentioned that? What was the reason why that the other officials used in chase people? The building, do you remember? It was these people are a rebellious people. And so now they're saying, you know what, we're going to make sure they know that right out the gate. We're going to make sure they know that. We're going to try to ignore that there is this other law and mention the law that better works for us. And they're using strategy. Why are they doing these tactics if they believe God's just going to take care of it? They are doing it because just because God is sovereign does not mean that you aren't supposed to be doing something. And when we do things, sometimes we can do things well and we can do things poorly. Have you ever heard someone sing well? Have you ever heard someone sing poorly? Anybody able to tell if someone sings well or poorly and you are not a singer? Okay, you can tell if it's at the extremes. You know, not the more professional singer can tell if it's just slight off or those kind of things. You can tell if it's good or not. Ladies, when you were younger, or maybe even now, when you had a guy approach you because he was interested in you, have you ever had a guy try to do that well and a guy try to do that poorly? You ever had that before? Okay. So we can do the same thing, but we can do it well or we can do it poorly. And so here's what I want to do. When we come across what's going on, I'm not making progress. Nothing seems to be happening. Why is that? And we can put this in the realm of our finances. We can put it in our health. We can put it in our relationships. We can put it in our home and our possessions, our career. We can put it spiritually. We can put it in a lot of contexts. Things aren't going the way I want them to go. There's no progress. And so I need to ask myself, because I can just say, well, God must not want it to happen, and that's why this is the way that it is, and, you know, the world's just a horrible place, and that's why everything's wrong, and there's nothing I can do about it. But first, I should ask myself, am I doing this effectively? Am I managing my money effectively? I chuckle when I see people spend, and say, I don't know why I have financial trouble. I chuckle when I see people be jerky or cold and distant from everybody, and they say, I don't know why I have relationship problems, okay? And we have to stop blaming God for everything, and we do that. Did you notice that? We blame God. It's funny to see the atheist blame God for everything, too. That's kind of funny. But we blame God for everything, and we have to stop and ask ourselves, am I doing this well? And if the answer is, yes, I am, if that's the actual answer, well, then this issue isn't the problem. That's not the reason why I'm not getting progress. And so I move on to the second question. But if the answer is, I'm not doing this well, then I need to make some adjustments. I need to change things and then see what happens. I need to give it some time. I know we live in a very fast-paced society where we expect things to happen in 10 seconds. But try and change and modify the way you're doing it and see what happens. Give it some time. And if it improves, guess what? You figured out why you weren't progressing before, and great. Don't you want to progress? Wouldn't you rather know it was your fault and it's progressing than just pretend like it's not your fault and not get anywhere? Okay, so we figure it out and we progress. Great, that was the issue. But maybe we weren't doing it well. We start doing it well and we do it for a little while and we're still not getting anywhere. All right, well, that's where we move into the second question. The second question, which I can't remember either today. I'm going to blame my pain this morning on my memory. Okay, so they acknowledged their past sins in verse 12. They said, we are a people that were rebellious, and they admit that. Now, they admit it strategically, of course, and they admit it because it's relevant to the situation, because they have to let them know, otherwise this could be another hang-up, just like it was 100 plus years ago. So they're willing to say, you know, I have a problem. Are you willing to say you have a problem? If you need to, if it fits the circumstances, are you willing to admit? Because all of you, I remember being in services where someone who was acting in the prophetic gift. Now, sometimes I've been skeptic before. Sometimes they were, and sometimes I think they just say the same things all the time. Because I can do that too, by the way. Somebody here has a deep, dark secret of a thing that you're struggling with, and you're keeping all to yourself, and you hope that nobody finds out about it. But I want you to know that God knows right now about your deep, dark secret. And at any moment, he can reveal to me that it is you that has that deep, dark secret. And I remember sitting in services like that, like this. Because I'm thinking, he's going to find out, and he's going to tell everybody. Because we like to keep secrets. We don't like people to know that we are flawed and messed up, and we think that way. Have you ever thought of that? Have you ever thought of, I hope nobody finds out the way I think or the way I feel? We're messed up, and we try to pretend like we're not. We don't want anybody to know that. And there is a time, and there are things that you don't need to tell every single person. But there are times when you need to be able to be honest with yourself at least, and sometimes with others, to say, yep, I have that problem. And you know what's amazing? Is when you go to a person that you're kind of messing it up because of a certain thing or whatever, and you go to them and you say, you know what, I'm sorry, I have a problem, and this is my problem. You know what most people's response is to that? You know, it's okay, I get it. I'm not patient, I'm angry. This tends to come when we show up and say, all right, you know what, I'm just a horrible person. I'm not patient, I'm angry, I'm whatever it is, and you admit it, then you can get somewhere. And a lot of us, the reason why we keep saying it's God's fault that we're not getting anywhere, when really we need to stop and be honest with ourselves, am I trying? Am I actually making any effort? Am I really selfless in what I'm pursuing here, or am I just making this all about me? Is this what I want? Do I really want God's glory? Do I really want this to happen? You know, sometimes we act like we want something to happen, but deep down we don't want it to happen. And we keep blaming God and saying, it's you, God. You're the reason why it's not happening. But we aren't being honest about the things that are sitting in the circumstances that are there, that are causing the problems. We don't want to talk about it. And there's a reason why you're not making any progress, because you're not willing to admit what's going on. Now, if you ask that question and you discover that, no, I'm being honest with myself, I'm being really transparent, and that's the actual case, then good. It's not those issues, you can move on to the third question. All right? But if that is the issue, change it. Be honest with yourself. Give it some time. And if you start making progress, wonderful. Wouldn't you rather have to admit that you're a lousy, horrible human being and start seeing progress in your life than have to pretend like you're amazing and keep being in poor circumstances? Wouldn't you rather those options? We say that with our lips, but I think that we'll go out throughout this week and still kind of do the same stuff. I hope that's not the case with you guys. But if you change it and nothing happens, you still are not making progress, then it's not those two reasons. Then it might be the third reason, or the third question that we need to ask to figure out why I am not making progress. And this is where we get to the blended ones, where this is partially me, sometimes it's not. And that is that in verse 2, it says the prophets, they were prophesying to them, and it says in verse 2, the prophets were supporting them in their work. Now, I don't believe that they were necessarily doing the building, because prophets, what is their gifting? To say things, to reveal things. And I believe the prophets were encouraging them in what they were doing. And I don't know about you, but if you ever, have you ever had interactions with people and at some point you walked away saying, are they the crazy ones or am I the crazy one? Have you ever had that before? Like, are they messed up or am I messed up? Because I'm not sure, okay? That's what relationships are like, aren't they? Okay? And it's really hard to try to do the right thing or push through things, especially when circumstances are not really great. It's really hard to do that when everybody around you is trying to discourage you from doing it. When everybody around you is reacting poorly. You know what is easier to do? When everybody around you is encouraging you and being supportive of you and saying you can do it, there's just some strength in that. And so here they have the prophets encouraging them, and you might say, well, it'd be nice if I had some people in my life that were encouraging me. And you might say, it's because nobody cares about me, and it's because God doesn't care about me, and that's why I don't have anybody in my life to encourage me. Well, here's what I have a question for you. You need people in your lives. Are you pursuing people? You say that you need people in your life to encourage you, which is a funny scenario. Have you ever approached somebody that you discovered they wanted you to be affectionate towards them, and when you approach them, they're like this? Won't even make eye contact with you? And you think, okay, I'll try to love on that, I guess. It's hard to do. And if you're saying, I need people to love on me, I need people to be affectionate towards me, and you're cold, and you're distant, and you're not responsive, or have you ever tried a conversation with somebody, and everything you ask, the answer is, yep, good. Or they don't even give a verbal answer like teenagers do sometimes. They just go, There's nothing there. And you might say, well, I'm just not talkative, or I'm not social, and those kind of things. And listen, if you want relationships, you're going to have to give some. You're going to have to be responsive. You're going to have to be interactive. You're going to have to try to be nice, okay? Let's try to play nice, because people, as much as people should be gracious towards us, people don't like hanging around people that are not nice, all right? So to try to be nice, and you have to actually go where the people are, okay? So if you won't come to church, or you won't come to the social gatherings, or if you won't go to any social gatherings anywhere, if you just stay in your house in your homebody all the time, and you're in your house complaining, why does nobody love me? Because they don't know you exist. How would they know? You don't go up, well, I put things out there on Facebook. Has anybody put things out there on social media and had a line of people at your door wanting to spend time with you? It just doesn't work that way. If you or needing people to encourage you, then you need to go and be with people. But I've been with people and they didn't encourage me, all right? Well, first of all, there's a lot of people that aren't nice out there, all right? And so you need to find a lot of people to find the good people out there, and you just have to go through that. I'm sorry, stamina to keep. If you say, well, I've done it and I'm done, the reason why you don't have the stamina to keep pushing through is because you have no encouragers, and the reason why you have no encouragers is because you're not trying to put yourself in social situations. And if you're okay with that, and you don't really want it that badly, well then just stop complaining to God that he's not making progress in your life. So if the answer is, no, I do have people in my life that are encouraging me, okay, then this is not the issue. But if the answer is, no, I don't have people in my life encouraging me, then make the changes that you need to make. And if you've made those changes and you give it some time and still no progress, okay, well, then that's not the issue. Now, here's where it's outside of your control. Those officials that came to start to ask them what they were doing with this building, they let them keep building it. Why? Because God worked on their hearts to be favorable towards them. Sometimes people are going to be favorable towards you, and you're going to have the support in other people, because God is making it happen, because it was meant to happen. Sometimes God's not going to make that happen. And you can do all the work, and you can place yourself in all the circumstances, and you could do all the appealing with people. Have you ever found this to be true? There's some people you keep trying and trying and trying and trying and trying to reach out to, and you just don't get any receptivity from them, because they also are free will people, and they can make their own choices as well. And so sometimes you try, and you can't get the support. And you might have to ask yourself, well, am I actually supposed to proceed with this if God is not providing the support that I need to do it. And if, and this is where we get that wonderful experience where God tells us to just be content where we are. Don't you love that? Don't you love that? I know my kids love when I tell them that they should be okay with being bored. They hate, anybody know that about kids today? I don't know if that was the case when even further back than now, but kids, they can't stand being bored. I mean, there's times that we're sitting at the dinner table and one of my daughters will say, I'm bored. And we're like, we're eating. What do you mean you're bored? What am I supposed to do? Do a show and dance right now? Grab the guitar and do a mariachi performance or something? I don't understand. We're still in the Mexican theme there, by the way. Because people don't like things not to be the way they want them to be. But if you don't have the resources to move forward, and you've did all the things that you can do to have the resources to move forward, and you don't have the resources to move forward, I think God's telling you that it's not time. I think either it's not for you ever, or it's just not for you right now. And as much as this is where you can end up fighting against God's will for your life, as much as we'd love to just determine, because we're Americans and we can just get what we want whenever we want it, at some point you have to just be honest, go back to that second question and step back and say, you know what? It's not for me. I don't have the resources for it. Now, this is where you have to be honest and use some discernment, because some people do have the resources for it. It just takes a little effort. I'm amazed at how many people, when they reach one obstacle, they quit. Have you ever seen that before? Okay. So this does not mean that there's not obstacles you try to get over. But if you're seeing that it's just not happening, God's not giving me the favor. I'm trying. I'm giving the effort. And God's not giving me the favor. Then I think your circumstances are telling you, God is speaking through your circumstances, that it's time to be content where you are. I hate that answer, but that might be the answer. But if that's not the answer, you've asked those first three questions, you're doing the right thing, there's still another option, and there's the fourth question that we need to ask to try to discern. Am I supposed to be content? Am I supposed to try to strive and change this? Is some of this on me? And that is that in verse 11, and again, this is the letter that the officials wrote, but they're writing what they heard the Jews tell them as an explanation. And they asked them for their identity. Did you notice they didn't give names? Did you notice that? The Jews' response, at least. They didn't give names. You know what their response was? We are the servants of God. And you know why they said that? Because they believed that building this building, and you hear it in what they're saying in this chapter, they believed that building this building was what God's mission was for us. We are serving God's mission. This is what God's mission is, and we need to serve it. Now you need to ask yourself, the thing you're striving for that is not happening, is it God's mission? Now that does not mean that he doesn't care about things outside the mission, but you need to ask yourself, is this a part of God's mission? Because that's what he cares more about than you getting a nicer house, or a cleaner house, or a more peaceful house. That's what he cares more about than your relationships changing and being more friendly to you. That's what he cares about more than you getting all the physical healing that you'd like to have. He cares more about the mission. What is the mission? To seek and to save the lost and to see the saved grow and develop and become the people that they're supposed to be. That's the mission. So ask yourself, the thing you're so frustrated with right now, and I know that some of you came in this building frustrated today. You weren't necessarily frustrated at me or the church, but there are things in life that you're... Anybody care to confess that you're frustrated today? Okay, maybe not at this exact moment, but there are things on your mind that you're frustrated about, okay? I'm frustrated that these things aren't changing. And I want you to ask yourself a question. That thing that you're frustrated about, does it matter to the mission of God? And if it doesn't, unless, and this is where it's partly, God really doesn't need to make that happen. Unless, and this is where it's partly in our control, okay? And you'll see the psalm writers do this also. Do you ever see the psalm writers say, God, you need to deliver me out of this? And the reason why you need to deliver me out of this is you said you'd be faithful, and other people will not believe you're faithful if you don't deliver me out of this. So you need to deliver me out of this so that you can show other people that you are faithful, that you are who you are. Because you know what they're doing there? They're trying to align what they want to happen in with the mission. And sometimes that actually what happens is you discover, you know what, it can work that way. And well, why wasn't it working it before? Why did I have to say that? And it's because you were probably not pursuing the mission while pursuing the thing you're pursuing. And that's why you didn't see it happen. And so you make the change and you start pursuing the mission in the midst of pursuing this other thing. And if you see progress start to happen, wonderful. That's great. Don't you want that to happen? That's great. It happened. You figured out what the problem was. But if it doesn't change, well, then guess what you have to do? You have to be willing to say, you know what? This doesn't matter. I'm going to let it go. Isn't that hard to do, to let things go? You know, this isn't going to matter to me because it doesn't matter to the mission. Or you change it and you move on to the next question. And the next question, there's really only one option to this last question. And this one is completely out of our control. Ask yourself the question, 100 plus years before, another group of Jews were trying to do God's mission and it did not happen. And again, I have to remind you, 100 plus years before, because they died and the mission did not happen. They wanted God's mission to happen and they died not seeing it happen. Why? Why all of a sudden now we see prophets showing up and what are they prophesying? Build the temple. They're prophesying now is the time. And they're also seeing the indications of that when they begin to work with the people that were opposing before. All of a sudden now these people like us and they're okay with it, or at least they're open to it. And we see that the circumstances are saying it's happening now. And you need to ask yourself, if it's not happening, is it time? Is it time for it to happen? And am I the person that's supposed to make it happen? And you know how you know the answer? This one's real easy. You know how you know the answer? If it's time for it to happen, and you are the person to make it happen, and you're in all the right alignment, and you're doing all the right things, and it's not happening, it can't be the time, can it? If God really says this is the time, and you are the person to do it, and you're doing all the right things, and it's not happening, is it really the time? It can't be. You might be the person, and maybe it's later. Or you might not be the person, but it's now, but it's somebody else. But it cannot be that it's now, that God's determined will is for this to happen right now through you and it's not happening, then the answer can't be correct there then. And you have to realize you ran into a wall and you have to decide to accept, this isn't for me. And so if you find yourself for years longing to be married and it just isn't happening and you're doing all the right things and it's not happening, then you have to admit that this, at least right now, isn't for me. And I think there's healing sometimes if we can just say that out loud. Or the healing that you've been trying to get after, or that child of yours that has been wayward that you've been trying to get back to Jesus Christ, and it's not happening, and you're doing all the right things. At some point, you have to just admit, it must not be the time right now. Would you rather stay frustrated and angry and irritable? Or would you rather be able to have the peace that surpasses all understanding and to be able to rejoice in the Lord always? And again, I hope you don't misunderstand me. There are times we're supposed to struggle and strive, and there are definitely things that we can change in our lives. And there should be hope in us for earthly benefits to happen. But there are times where we have to just step back and say, that's why there's contentment words mentioned throughout the New Testament, where we have to just say this, you want to have another child, desperately want to have another child, and it's not happening. Sometimes you might, I remember when Heather and I were going through infertility and we were trying to conceive biological children, and at some point she and I both realized this wasn't God's plan for our life. You know who that bothered more? All of the other Christians in our lives. That drove them nuts. How could you say that God isn't going to make this happen in your life? Because we were content with that wasn't God's will for our life. That's okay. But it's a hard pill for a lot of Christians to swallow because we think we should just be able to get everything we ask for from God because we kind of misunderstand some of the things that Jesus says. And we're kind of these spoiled children that expect we should always be able to get what we want. And it's not true. That's a lie. You don't always get what, and you know that's true. I said that last week. You know it's true. Your whole life and the lives of others that you've observed and all of human history and all of biblical history tells us we do not always get what we want. But if it's because we're not doing the right things, then we better get up and start doing the right things and stop blaming God. But if it's not for us, we need to be willing to say it's okay. A number of you confessed when I asked earlier, did you come into this place with frustrations? And you said yes. Okay. That does not mean that you have to come to the altar this morning, but it might. Some of you stand in this building today, and Aaron, you might have to lead us on. Oh, there he is. Okay, good. We're praying for Joe and myself. We're both kind of not doing well today. But some of you, you have some decisions to make. Some of you, you have decisions to make that you've been punting and punting and kicking that can down the road over and over and over again because you don't know what to do. And you need some answers. Well, maybe the reason why you don't have the answers is because you've not been honest with God. You've not come before him and been honest. You've not been willing to submit to his will. And you've had other things there that are clouding the ability for you to hear. But I'm telling you, if you want answers, he has answers this morning. He is here this morning, and he wants to reveal his purposes for your life if you're willing to listen. And so as the worship team leads us, if that's you, I invite you to come and seek him as long as it takes for the answer for which direction, God, do I need to go? Or perhaps you're here this morning, and as you're reflecting through what we're considering this morning, you realize that you're not actually all that dedicated to God's mission. You've been caught up in your own personal agenda and the things that you're trying to make happen in your life. And you've not given much thought for weeks, months, maybe even years about the great commission of the mission that God has for your life. And you want to realign yourself with that mission this morning. Or maybe lastly, you're here this morning, and this can go one way or the other. You realize that you need God's strength to be able to let go of whatever that thing is that you need to let go of. And or you realize that this morning you need to get up and start striving where you haven't been striving. You've been blaming God for your finances, blaming God for your health. I'm telling you, eating cake all the time really doesn't help you on your health objectives. But we find ourselves complaining about our circumstances when all the while God's saying, get up and do something. Get up and strive. But you're afraid. You're afraid. What if I do it wrong? What if I mess this thing up? You're afraid. And you need God to take that, because perfect love casts out all fear. Doesn't God consistently say, do not fear. Do not be anxious for anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, present your request before God. Aren't you tired of living life frustrated? Aren't you tired of being so irritable? Aren't you tired of being so down? Don't you want to be joyful? Don't you want to be free from that? Don't you want to be at peace? Then Jesus has the answers for us this morning, and he has all the strength to give us to enable us, if we're scared, to start striving, or if we're too willing to let go, he can enable us to do that also. Right down at these altars, it is a place for you to seek him. Come and begin to seek him. He wants to show you. He wants to help you. Let's seek him this morning.